This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on December 1st, 2011. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The next item on our agenda is the agency procedure for notice to named respondents in enforcement matters of additional material facts and or additional potential violations. Commissioner Walther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is a draft what it attempts to do is take into consideration the situations that we're in often, not all that often, but regularly, where during the process prior to RTB, the Office of General Counsel will learn of information that bears on a complaint that's filed. The information may come before or after a response is given by the respondent. The question then becomes what should the OGC do at that point if it is material to the matter, whether it's beneficial or otherwise in connection with the matter under review. And in the past, we've been troubled with exactly what to do in that regard. Some commissioners question the extent to which the Office of General Counsel has the right to do anything with facts that come to its attention after the complaint is filed, perhaps no matter how egregious the facts might be. On the other hand, if they're favorable facts, it wouldn't hurt to let a respondent know that in a given case after the respondent has already filed his or her response. But the Office of General Counsel doesn't have guidance in that regard, and so what typically happens is we find that the fact surfaces in an Office of General Counsel report to the commission, and at that time we then have the matter come before us and we discuss it, and almost without exception, in my recollection, we then say, at least in the last couple of years, in fairness, we need to let the respondent have the benefit of that information, give the respondent the benefit of that, and then come back to us with a supplemental response if the respondent wants to provide one. This seems fair to me. What this policy does is really kind of incorporate what we've done in the past and says if you come across something that's material, beneficial or otherwise, the respondent doesn't know about it, wasn't in the complaint, then the respondent has an opportunity automatically to respond. The question then comes, well, what if we didn't really think that was a good idea to provide the respondent with that fact because OGC shouldn't be able to do anything with it? Really, in this particular case, I've never seen a case like that occur. I know there's trepidation about that. But I think what we should do is, in fairness, let the chips fall as they may, let the respondent learn of the information, give them a chance to respond to it, rather than ask the Office of General Counsel to come all the way through the process, prepare a report, give us the information, send it back, then revise it accordingly, and get another 1 or 2, maybe 3 month delay involved over that particular matter. If we find that there was something that the four commissioners think went awry, certainly we can deal with it at any time. It also provides that in the event this doesn't happen for any reason, and we do ultimately resolve a matter at RTB stage with facts that weren't made known to the respondent, the respondent can move for a reconsideration, and it takes 4 votes at that time, that's rare, to then reconsider it. And that really what it amounts to. So it tries to incorporate what we already do, but give 4 votes, which we have at any time anyway, let someone reconsider our decision on RTB if there were facts out there that they didn't get a chance to respond to. And that also seems fair to me. It seems fair to incorporate it. What it does is give notice to a respondent that there is an avenue for this. Granted, they've got an uphill battle of getting 4 votes after we've made a decision already, but at least the approach is there. So that's what this attempts to do. I'd like to see the commission adopt it if possible.
Is there any further discussion? Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I first of all want to thank Commissioner Walter for all of his efforts on developing this policy. I think that I'm not going to be prepared to support it today, but I think that what he's trying to do here is of a piece with what the Commission's been doing on many occasions in recent years, which is to add greater procedural due process and fairness to and especially in this case, to ensure that the respondents have access to all the facts that the Commission may rely upon in making an RTB vote, and also that they have a chance to respond to any of those facts beforehand. I think that it is a matter of fairness, and like I said, I'm not prepared to be able to support it today, but I do want to continue to work with Commissioner Walter to see if we can find some way to enact the core of this policy, because I think it is something that is important. I think it is something that's consistent with the direction that the Commission's been taking in recent years. Thanks.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also compliment Commissioner Walter for all of his efforts on this. I think there's a lot in here that I like. Simply, I think at this point, codifies what our practice has been over the last number of years, which has been, which has evolved as in part a compromise between those who think that it's we should restrict our view to the four corners of the complaint and those who think it's appropriate to look at publicly available information while we are considering whether to vote RTB. And sometimes that plays to the respondent's advantage because publicly available information also includes information that's in our own records, that's in our own public database that might not be included in the complaint, or we've had situations where, for example, somebody complains that somebody else didn't file a statement of organization, and the respondent, who knows they filed a statement of organization, might not even want to put the resources into responding because they know it's bogus. Well, if we don't go beyond the four corners of the complaint and we don't have a response, and we don't look at our own publicly available information to find the statement of organization, we might have to find RTB in order to get to the point where we would be able to dismiss the complaint, which seems kind of silly. There have been ongoing debates about whether we should look at things in the newspaper. Often people who are the subject of complaints have been publicly quoted on issues that are related to the subject matter of the complaint, and it's out there, it's in the public domain. It's always struck me as a little bit silly that we should not look at it and pretend that we alone amongst the public aren't aware of what people are saying publicly. So to the extent that this codifies that ongoing practice of that has evolved of, well, all right, we're going to look at this stuff, but if we do look at it, if we rely on it if we're going to rely on it in our finding RTB, then we're going to show it to them first and give them a chance to respond to it. And we've been doing it. I don't think there's been a problem with our pursuing that practice over the last number of years. So that whole piece of this is fine with me, and I'd be happy to support it. The reason that I can't support it today is that it incorporates a new procedure that we have not so far adopted, which is a motion for reconsideration, which strikes me as unnecessary, particularly in this context where it's a pretty straightforward, you look at the complaint, and if we're including anything else in the RTB determination, then we send it to them. And it hasn't been, as I said, it hasn't been a problem. So I don't really see the need to create an extra procedure that's going to potentially bog us down. And I think there is the, and it almost makes it look like, I know this wasn't the intent, but it almost makes it look like, there would have to be rank incompetence or bad faith for us to mess this up and require a motion for reconsideration. But I do think there is the potential for some unintended consequences. I think that we could easily find ourselves in the current environment with we make it to RTB, and then somebody files a motion for reconsideration, and then find ourselves on, in a split vote on whether to accept the motion for reconsideration, grant the motion for reconsideration. And then I think it leaves the staff in a very awkward situation because they've got four votes and a mandate to investigate, but they know that half the commission doesn't actually want them to do that anymore. So I think it has the potential to create some very ambiguous situations. So I can't support that part of it. And I won't be voting for the policy for that reason. But again, I think there's really a lot of good work that went into this and a lot of good stuff that just reflects current practice, and I don't think that current practice is going to change with or without this policy being adopted.
Commissioner McGann.
Thank you. Commissioner Peterson, I can't support this today, but I certainly appreciate and have appreciated since I've been appointed working with Commissioner Walther on a number of procedural changes, which I think have eliminated many of the complaints that had piled up over the years about the FEC being, for lack of a better word, very black box and not due process friendly. I think now folks have a much better opportunity to be heard, which to me has always been 90% of the problem. When people feel that they've been heard and their arguments have been considered, even if they lose, they feel better about it. This one is a little bit different than the others, because on it, there's two levels here. In the first level, it's an easy yes. The commission ought not vote reason to believe on a legal theory or a set of facts without having the respondent be able to at least brief the issue in some form or at least be made aware of it. This was a problem in years past where you may go through an audit or you may have a referral from RAD. You get in the mail a letter saying the commission's already found reason to believe, and you've never really had a chance to explain to the commission that that there was some mistake of fact or mistake of law. And the first chance you really had was years later in the probable cause stage to really file a brief with the commission. So that really wasn't fair for anyone involved. That, for the most part, has been fixed. You now have an opportunity to file a brief. You get notified when there's been a referrals and that sort of thing. This addresses a little bit different situation that has come up over the years. And again, if you're going to vote reason to believe, you ought to give the respondent a chance to be heard. But the second level is the predicate question to that, which is, and to use Commissioner Walter's phrases, if they, quote, come across something not in the complaint, unquote. Well, that's where I get hung up, because that's where it gets somewhat awkward. I could see a situation where there's a complaint that seems to allege a generalized violation of the act but is a little bit fuzzy. So the respondent sort of responds but doesn't really file a specific response. The staff may read it one way. We may read it the same way or a different way. There's some confusion. It doesn't really seem like the respondents had a chance to address what's on the commission's mind. I think in that instance it makes sense to send the respondent a letter and say, hey, here's where we are. Could you please respond to this particular accusation? Or you send a letter to the complainant and say, hey, your complaint's vague, if you really don't want to just dismiss it outright. Because remember, complaints have to be filed under oath. They're supposed to be based upon facts, not just speculation. A complaint that says we think this person violated the act really isn't enough. You have to actually have some specificity, says the statute. Responses sometimes come in and sort of answer questions, but sometimes they create more confusion than they solve. And you can see a situation where a response comes in and the accusation is you took corporate money from Corporation X, and the response is, no, the money didn't come from Corporation X, it came from China. Okay, well, that wins the case on the corporate contribution, but now you've put squarely before the Commission of Foreign National Issues, so what do we do? You can't say that wasn't in the complaint, so we're going to dismiss the complaint. That doesn't make a lot of sense. So it does make sense, and Commissioner Walter's on the right track, to give the respondent an opportunity to explain how money from China in that case would be legal. The problem, though, is the statute, our statute is a little bit different than other agencies. Other agencies like the FTC and the SEC, the staff are empowered to investigate before bringing it to the agency head. The FEC statute is quite different and quite specific, where before an investigation occurs, the commission itself has to approve the initial reason to believe vote. Compare this to the FTC, where the FTC staff can go and investigate and then bring it to the FTC. If you look at FTC versus Standard Oil, an old Supreme Court case, it goes through this. The issue there was whether a reason to believe vote was subject to judicial review. In the FTC context, it wasn't, but notwithstanding that, you can see the difference in the statutes. The problem I have with the proposal today is I think it does some violence to the statute, because it could lead to, or maybe encourages, what I call a pre-RTB investigation by the General Counsel's office, which I don't think the statute permits. I think the Commission has to green light that in the first instance. So there's a difference between things that I think are in the complaint and in the response, or on the public record, meaning in the publicly available reports, and things that are dug up through pre-RTB letters and pre-RTB phone calls, generating issues that are not really in the complaint. And my concern is that this policy could encourage that sort of activity, which has happened from time to time. It's been toned down over the past couple years, but several years ago it had gotten ramped up rather aggressively, and I think it's important that we adhere to the statute on the process. So if we can come up with a policy that I think adheres to the statute and doesn't sanction pre-RT investigations, I am all for the idea of giving people the opportunity to be heard. But at this point, I don't think this policy does that. I would suggest that we take a look at Directive 6, an oldie but a goodie. The directives are now public. They're available on the website. Didn't used to be the case, but they're public now. It talks about its title, Handling of Internally Generated Matters. It talks about what the Commission's supposed to do if there's a newspaper article that looks like there's a violation. A lot of these questions have already been answered. It seems like the practice of the Commission has deviated from this directive. I would suggest we take a look at the directive, and if we can have a policy that gives the directive some life, then that makes some sense. The directive talks about the legislative history, about verified complaints and that sort of thing. So there's some good history in there that I think ought to help us. But to simply do a policy that essentially changes the time we investigate from post-RTB to pre-RTB, I can't support that. But happy to keep working with everyone to come up with something that we can all live with, because there is an issue here that does come up from time to time, where things end up being put before the Commission that are properly before us. So with that, I yield back and hope to keep working with everyone to solve this riddle.
Commissioner Walther?
Thanks very much. I'm obviously quite aware of the diverse opinions about this, but I felt it's important to start talking about it, and sometimes the only way we can do it is if we have a meeting and we all sit in the same room and talk about it. I think I would point out a couple things. I carefully attempted to not deal with the issue that we have not been able to resolve, and I don't think is necessary to resolve in order to adopt a policy like this. The issue is when we have these facts, and we can argue about in another context whether they should or should not, what do we do in connection with being fair to a respondent? And we have uniformly pretty much agreed that the respondent should have knowledge of whatever new facts, beneficial or otherwise, comes out of the beginning of a look at RTB. And I don't think that it's likely that there would be four votes to support OGC never looking at other facts. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't mean you have to go out on a witch hunt or seek new violations, but certainly whatever is in the public eye shouldn't be ignored if it's readily available. And sometimes information comes just from the knowledge of a commissioner or a staff member about another incident. Should we ignore that? I don't think so. So I think it helps us to speed up the process to have a process. On the other end, we have one faction that worries about the beginning and the other worries about the end, so I'm not sure if we'll ever get together on this, but it provides a very short time fuse, shorter than if we didn't have one. Because if somebody writes to us and says, hey, you guys really missed a material fact, you didn't tell me about it, you can be sure that there's going to be some of us that are going to want to say, hey, well, let's take a look at that. Here what happens is within 10 days, a respondent must let us know about it. We have within 10 days to decide what we want to do about it and get 4 votes. If we cannot get 4 votes, it automatically is dismissed and we proceed as if we had not even had that procedure. So you'd have a 20-day period at the outset. But I understand that this is not likely to have more than one vote today, And maybe we can put it off until the next meeting and see if we can make some headway.
Okay. So thank you, Commissioner Walther. We will hold off on any further consideration by the Commission of this document until a future date.